Are we ready, Mike?
Just a second. Okay, we're live.
Good evening, everyone. I would like to call the study session of the University City City Council to order on at 5:30 on August 8, 2022. We recognize that a great travesty has occurred in our community over the past couple of weeks, and we want to let everyone know who is viewing the study session that the city manager and I will make some comments at the beginning of the public session, and then I'm sure my colleagues as well will have comments as well regarding what happened on July 26th and 28th. We will go forward with the study session, but there's usually a wider audience for the regular session, and so we will do the update during the regular session. So with that being said, Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, there's one item on the agenda that I would like to have changed from the consent agenda to the regular agenda.
Okay.
And that is item J1. And I believe there was another item that Mayor Pro Tem was interested in.
Mayor Crow and Mr. Rose, that item doesn't need to be moved. It can stay and we can I can discuss it there. So thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Hearing nothing else, Mr. Rose, you'd like to introduce the next topic?
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, several few months ago, you had asked for us to prepare for you information on our active shooter preparedness. And so tonight I have Chief Hampton that will be leading off this discussion. Certainly he's not able to share with you everything because the forum that we're presenting this information in, but I have asked Chief Hampton to share as much detail as he can without in any way jeopardizing our operations. Chief Hampton.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Rose. Good evening, Mayor and members of the council and all others joining us today. I'm going to try to share my screen. I know this is a little different than what we had planned, being in person, reference the active shooter update. Can everyone see the screen? Okay.
Yes.
All right. This is the active shooter update for 2022 from the University City Police Department. This is also in conjunction with the University City Fire Department and medical personnel. The active shooter program for University City alone for our public safety mechanisms is very proactive and it's effective. It's a training program that we jointly train. We've been doing this now since 2012. This is something that we hope never has to be implemented, but this is something that we are prepared for. As you can see within, and I'm not going to go through every bullet point in order for the conserving of time, but understanding that we'll give you time to see and reflect on what the training persists of. We gathered from FBI standards, from Department of Homeland Security standards, and this is a jointly trained mechanism that we do within St. Louis County, St. Charles County, all of the greater metropolitan area. So this is, and you see the term MACTAC. This MACTAC is a leading program that is trained within the law enforcement communities and the fire and safety communities for St. Louis County, St. Louis metropolitan, as well as St. Charles County and other counties going forward. You'll see that the program for the schools, we have PowerPoint presentations for our school personnel, our faculty, our staff. We sometimes it does include some children at that point, but understanding that the deadly hour of the definition is the run, hide, and fight. That is, you'll hear it rephrased in several different types of programs. If you research active shooter programs out there, like Alice, we have several Alice trained instructors as well, but understanding that it all reflects around the deadly hour and the run, hide, and fight mechanism, the survival mindset of the fight, flight, or freeze response as well. You'll see other points, entrance of the one person, two person, three person, four person scenarios that we all train on. We hope to have as many personnel available as possible when that deadly hour is upon us. However, we're trained to go in when there's just one person. That's no longer a mechanism where we wait and try to gather our troops for maximum patrol. The purpose is to minimize the threat, as well as minimize the event for casualties. Okay, technologies utilized within our training, not only within our training, but within the implementation that we ever have a tactical event dealing with active shooter responses. So yes, we do fly drones within buildings. Yes, we do fly drones within religious institutions, within schools, buildings, within business settings, and all for the purpose of preserving life. That is for the officers as well as for the patrons that may be within that building. So we can quickly identify that technology helps us quickly identify maybe where that threat is coming from, because not only is it for video, but it is also audio purposes as well. And it's very stealth to the point where you have to be a very prolific shooter to have to take down one of these drones that you're seeing. And these are some of the larger drones. There are some much smaller that we can utilize as well within the buildings. Updated PowerPoint or updated shooter presentations. The program itself has been modified to be fit within a 1 hour training for the schools, as well as a 2 hour training for the religious institutions. In addition to presenting the PowerPoint, the University City Police Department pairs, and we do scenarios within this training as well. So you'll see assistance from all of these different stakeholders and partners within our community and outside of our community. It encompasses many other principles, as well as the SEPTED principles, as well as understanding the FEMA and the DHS approved information or academia information that is out there. So just understanding that this is not something that we're making up on the fly or something that is just only presented by St. Louis County. This is a national way of training, and MACTAC is our way of leaning towards a specific training here in the St. Louis area. You'll see on this slide, there's dates of numerous active shooter trainings, and I only had them go back as far as a few years. You see all the different locations: Brittany Woods, Lieberman, Pershing. You'll see Epstein Hebrew Academy, City Lights Church. You'll see all, and this is just some of the documentation. Like I said, I didn't have them go all the way back to 2012 when the documentation first began. Also, understanding that these are the presentations presented to those individuals for those organizations. Now, understanding we also utilize these buildings and these organizations, and we lean on them as far as doing our joint training, not only with the fire department. We have trained with St. Louis County. We have trained with Washington University. And this is something done on an annual basis. 9 times out of 10 is done 2 to 3 times a year for that purposes. The most recent training, I can tell you, took place. It was University City Police Department, University City Fire Department, as well as Washington University. We were able to get into the old tour prep before it was being taken down and utilized for the purposes of Costco development. So that was a very extensive all-day training that we had our personnel scheduled, even those that were off. And that is something that, is very useful for us. Even old buildings, decrepit buildings that we can sometimes utilize, long as it's safe enough for us to be within. The training mechanism is every member of the UCPD department is, and UCFD is also trained on the mechanisms of MACTech and understanding what the purpose is, understanding the trends and the patterns, understanding how to correct the bad actions that we're doing in training and how to supervise that correctly. First, having the policy starts with understanding that we must engage with an active threat, not stand by and wait for an active threat to end on its own. That's something that University City Police Department has been taught for many years, dating back to well past 2012, but 2012 is when we first started branching out and training within our own community and what have you. Now, these next two slides, these are just some, this is a quick slide of the actual training that took place within the last couple of years. This is one of the slides, and hopefully it's not too loud for everyone. You'll see some of the training. I can tell you this, I believe this was Brittany Woods, if I'm not mistaken. Stand reflect. I believe that was the high school. Let me go to the next one. This is Brittany Woods. And very quickly, what you did see was some of the components of the MACTech training style, whether that's one person, whether that's two, whether that's three or four. There's a very elaborate training on how to enter, how to cut corners, how to deal with rooms, how to locate the threat without even technology, but encompassing technology within that, the surveillance cameras, the drones, even our tools with our canine partners that we have. That is all something that helps enhance the active shooter response for our law enforcement community, as well as our fire community. I have a question slide up. I would definitely take this off unless someone wants me to go back to something.
I know many of you have your microphones muted. So if you have a question, if you would please let me know by raising your hand, or hopefully my internet will work tonight. Councilmember Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. I want to thank you, the city manager. And also, I want to thank the chief, especially about this presentation. And I do know that the flood issue is the issue going on currently. But I also want to thank you for this, because, again, that's still a critical issue that's happening nationally. And one of the things I always like for us to do as a council, as a city, is to reassure the residents that this is how we would handle certain things. We have a protocol, we have a process. And I do appreciate Chief Hampton showing us this information. And one factor is that you're gonna go in, sir, right? That no matter what, whether that be one, two, three, like you said, or four, you're going in. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, thank you, sir. That's my statement.
Chief, do you know in the when you were talking about the entities that you've already been into or done training with, has there been outreach to most of the faith community?
Yes, there has. We recently had a religious institution training. Either was at the beginning of this year or was right at the end of 21. But I can tell you when we do that actively. That's a 2-hour presentation. And it's something of teaching how to harden that space and that target for those different locations. And not only do we provide that training free of charge, but then we also actively try to pursue them for a security assessment, a SEPTED security assessment by my commanders or my investigators to understand how we can harden those targets even further. Most of the synagogues, I have the private practice. We deal with Scott Biondo and the Jewish Federation League quite often, and understanding that that those synagogues are taking their own practices within the private sector to utilize some of those elements to help harden their target. We're also doing that with many of the other religious institutions and schools. Now, keep in mind that you have private schools that seek out private vendors as well. This is not something that law enforcement has to be the one to lead the way and train. There are many other trainers and aspects that can deliver that same message.
Other questions?
Mayor Crow,
that's I don't know if you see me. Yep.
Thank you. So I was going to ask about premises identification. Is that the next presentation? So I should wait to ask about that. Is that correct?
We have Deputy Chief Kramer here that
would be doing right.
Very brief
presentation. I was taking them as one, but clearly they're two separate. So I'll hold off.
One, two different parts to it.
Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. Chief, how young are the, at our schools, how young are the students that you go in and present the programs to?
The youngest that has actively been involved has been middle school age. And of course the high school and we still have to be very guarded by the information that we do provide within that aspect, because we are still mainly focusing on the faculty, the staff, and the security aspect for that organization. So yes, but the youngest has been middle school.
So in the schools where there are younger children, then your training is just to the faculty and staff and not to students. Is that correct?
And that's because their protocols are dictated by that school district and that entity, that private entity. So specifically in some communities, some school districts, they will encompass the ALICE program that you heard me speak of, or they will simply encompass the DHS, Department of Homeland Security protocol in place. So there are several different protocols that certain school districts utilize. We simply take them all under the umbrella and understand that deadly hour is something that must not be misconstrued and laid upon as far as being it has to be a timely response. It has to include that everyone knows what to do at what times, whether that's locking doors, locking down, whether that's fleeing if possible, or whether that's coordinating a fight with the last ditch effort.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, we'll move on, Mr. Rose, with Deputy Chief Kramer.
Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, awesome. So the premises identification system, let me go ahead and share my screen with you here. Can you see that okay?
Not yet.
Okay. So the premises identification system was put together by the Greater St. Louis County Fire Chiefs Association and the Fire Marshals Association.
Deputy Chief Kramer, are you trying to share your screen because we can't see it?
Can you see it now?
No. I think you can. It's just a very brief presentation, so you can just go ahead and cover it. Everyone has the slides.
So it's basically, I think you guys have some handouts. So it was put together basically to make navigations around the schools in the St. Louis metropolitan area easier for law enforcement or police, fire, who have never been in those schools before. And it uses a color-coded system to create zones inside all the schools in the area. And they'll be the same throughout the schools throughout the area. So no matter what school that the police officers go into or the firefighters go into, they'll be familiar with the system. And it would create, let's say, as you first enter the school, the first hallway would be the red zone and so on. The next hallway, and it moves counter, moves clockwise around the school. So it breaks the school into zones, and then each room has their number and what zone that they're in. So it's they paint a stripe at the bottom of the walls along the corridors and that signify what zone they're in. So the rooms are color coded, the corridors are color coded, the doors entering the buildings, entering the schools are all color coded with numbers on them. So anybody that could come in from, let's say, Pattonville Fire Police, they would be familiar with the system and be able to get around inside the school. This was written as an ordinance. I've already talked to one school in University City. They were kind of lukewarm about repainting their schools. Talking to the other fire marshals, it's been mixed bag whether folks in the schools want to do it or not throughout the whole area. I think we'd like to try and work with the schools possibly before implementing an ordinance. That may be up to you guys with input from our fire chief. But I do have some meetings scheduled with the U City Public Schools and a couple of the other schools, and we're going to try and talk them into letting us implement this throughout the whole area. St. Louis County has passed an ordinance already, but that only deals with the unincorporated areas, and the munis and the fire districts would have to pass it themselves in order to make it binding. Do you guys have any questions?
I believe that Councilmember Clay had a question prior to the beginning of your presentation. Mr. Clay.
I did. Thank you, Mayor. So you went into some detail, Deputy Chief Kramer, about my question. So this is not yet implemented in particular University City schools.
That's correct.
There's a conversation to be had about implementing it.
That's correct. I'm meeting with the superintendent for the U City School, I think next week. And I was going to invite the police department if they wanted to come along with us too. It impacts them greatly. Around the area, it is being implemented in some schools. Some areas have passed the ordinance. Other areas are just trying to work with the schools instead of trying to force them to do it.
Do you know schools or districts that have implemented this?
Yes, there are some in the area that have, even down here in Jefferson County. So it's not just St. Louis County and St. Louis City, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about them. But yes, there are schools that it is being implemented in, and some of them are done already.
Yeah, and not to put you on the spot, perhaps as a follow-up, I'd just be interested in the schools who already have implemented it, just for my own information. But it's nothing we need to take up right here. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Any other questions? Hearing none, Deputy Chief Kramer, thank you. Chief Hampton, thank you for your presentations. We appreciate all the work that you do, and we know you guys have been putting in long hours as well over the past several weeks. So thank you for all that you do. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, the second item asks that you receive a presentation on the bike path proposal. And Mr. Dunkel, would you like to introduce this item?
Yes, tonight we have Mark Weiner here with members of GRG to give a presentation on an east-west connector, basically running from the Ackert walkway at Vernon all the way to the Inner Belt. At this time, I'll turn it over to Mr. Weiner to give his presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Dunkel. And thank you all for taking time this evening to listen to this presentation, this proposal. I'm a longtime U City resident on and off since 1951, and have served the city as a volunteer as chair of the Economic Development Commission and also a member of the Pension Board. So I've been very committed to making University City a better place for a long time. We are also joined by Angelica Gutierrez, who is now rep- part of Great Rivers Greenway, which is going to play an important role, and Mark Vogel, who is also with Great Rivers Greenway. I know we're on a little short for time this evening, so I want to move along. I think Mike has a PowerPoint presentation that he is going to put on the screen as we quickly go through this, and then I'll have some time for Angelica and Mark to also explain what Great Rivers Greenway brings to the table in terms of expertise and resources. And finally, we want to have some time to answer your questions. So am I correct that we should be done by 6:30? Is that what we're looking at? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mayor. So to start, during COVID, I spent a great deal of time walking in parks around the region, but primarily in University City. And I have been a biker and enjoy the bike path in Forest Park and around the region, but primarily I'm a walker. And I realized that there were already two Greenway paths in University City. The first runs from Washington U's campus to Vernon, primarily on the Eckerd Park Greenway. A second is through Heman Park, just west of the community center off of Vernon, and then the actual trail runs through the park and ends at Purdue and Midland. And then the final portion of the trail that already exists in Youth City is along I-170 from the Ladue city limits to Olive Boulevard. So I realized that these segments of the trail existed, but they needed to be connected by an east-west connector. Mr. Dunkel shared with me some proposals that had been prepared by Great Rivers Greenway in 2014. And I looked through those. They had two alignments A and B. And he explained, and others have explained, that there was a lot of opposition to those two alignments, primarily from people who would have to grant easements or allow this trail to be run through their property, and that made it not feasible, since so many of the owners didn't want it going through their property. So I came up with another way of doing this. And what I'd like to do, could we move to the who slide? And again, like the chief, I'm not going to read all of these slides. You have them in your packet, but there are a lot of people who are potential partners and essential partners. The city, of course, the traffic department, the parks department, the school district, and then St. Louis County, which controls some of the main roads that this Greenway trail would be along. The beneficiaries are all of us who like to walk and be safe, people in wheelchairs who really don't find the sidewalks navigable because they're uneven, and walkers who want to take a pleasant walk, as I've been doing, and avoid traffic. So could you go to the next slide, please? So we would build this trail with the help of Great Rivers Greenway on existing city and county right-of-ways. It allows us to provide accessible and safe transportation alternatives to buses and cars and trucks. We think, from what I've learned, that this is a really good time for us to do this because Great Rivers Greenway is looking for communities to work with and wants to complete its vision of a greenway network through the region. And one of the very first trails that was initiated was the Centennial Greenway Trail. That's what we have in Eckerd Park and along I-170. And the vision from the beginning has been to connect Forest Park and Creve Coeur Lake Park so that people have a safe, accessible greenway that they can go many miles on in the region and be outdoors and be healthy and not contribute to pollution. Could we go to where, please? I think that's the next slide. Okay. There's an accompanying map that I think we couldn't put on the screen this evening, but I think all of you have it, if not in your hands, certainly in your minds. You know, all of us know the main thoroughfares in University City. And this particular proposal avoids taking anyone's property, taking anyone's parking spaces. It would start at Vernon, where Eckerd Park ends, and go along the north side of Vernon, front of the fire station and the property where the grocery store sat for many years, and then go along Vernon to Heman Park. That is the area that's been impacted so heavily by the flooding in the past week or two. And ironically, St. Louis County has received approval and funding to repave that section of Vernon. And it's my understanding that they did not collaborate with Great Rivers Greenway or University City in designing this new road. And instead, what we'll be getting is pretty much the road that exists now, kind of a road that's existed for 100 years, and it'll be new and it'll have curb cuts and it'll be that road that we're all very familiar with. I think there are alternatives that could be explored to allow for a safe, separate greenway along that road without taking any parking spaces. You go further to the west into Heman Park, and the trail already exists, marked as Centennial Greenway Trail, and it runs to Midland. It would cross Midland at the end of the Heman Park Trail and just go briefly on the west side of Midland where there are no houses and no parking to speak of, and then turn on to Wilson and go along the existing public right-of-way on Wilson or possibly where there used to be homes, but those homes have been acquired and now we have a green space. That would take us up to Shaftesbury by the high school, and we could go along the side of the high school near the hockey fields, cross Hanley at that light, continue on west to on Shaftesbury to north and south where the fire station exists, and continue on Shaftesbury crosses a tributary of the River De Pere near Mona Drive and cross there. And then again, continue on Shaftesbury where there are no homes facing the street between Mona Trail and Groby Road, past Kaufman Park. Bring the Greenway up Groby, in front of Brittany Woods, and then along either the south side of Ruth Park, where there's room without taking any parking or impacting the golf course, or an alternative that I've spoken about with some of you is to take it along the west side of the Brittany Woods property, adjacent to Ruth Park, and then along the side of the golf course leading over to McKnight Road. Personally, I think it's more feasible to just leave it on Groby and Old Bonham, because there's an existing connection at Old Bonham just before you get to the inner belt, to the existing Centennial Greenway Trail along the inner belt. So I think I'm going to really make this shorter, because usually the best part of these presentations that I've had with the Traffic Commission and the Parks Commission has been the back and forth, the questions, and the questions all of you have asked when I've met with you each of you one-on-one. But I do have an ask for you tonight, and that is that you consider moving forward with this proposal and exploring the feasibility of something like this with Great Rivers Greenway, and also advocate with St. Louis County that they use the resources that they have when they're rebuilding streets and repaving and redesigning to consider greenways as part of what they're doing. So I want to give Ms. Gutierrez and Mr. Vogel some time to share their perspectives and then answer any questions you might have.
Is that a cue for us to speak?
I think that must be your cue.
That was okay. It, Mark.
Well, I just wanted to thank you all for giving us the opportunity to attend your work session here. And I think that the alignment that Mark has presented is has a lot of merit to it. I will say that this is a project, as you mentioned, GRG has not studied in 10 years now. And so if you've been following some of the projects that we're doing elsewhere around the region, you know, we place a huge value on community engagement, and you know, we've got a pretty solid process for doing alignment studies and, you know, getting a lot of community input and making sure that people's voices are heard, concerns are addressed, and things like that. And so I just wanted to be, you know, very upfront that, you know, the GRG has not studied this in quite a while. And while it does look very feasible, and I think you've done a great job in laying out the benefits and the reasons why this alignment could really be a great addition to the bike ped network in University City and for the entire region. I just want to be clear, you know, GRG is sort of at square one with this right now. Now, however, there are situations like with St. Louis County or other municipalities when a project has been studied and it looks like it does have community support, that GRG, you know, could get involved. And so that is certainly a potential. And as Mark explained, the long-term vision is to connect Forest Park with Creve Coeur Park, you know, with Centennial Trail, and in fact, go into St. Charles County. And Helica's working on a few extensions of the Centennial Greenway right now in other locations. And eventually this project would go through St. Peter's all the way to 370 Lakeside Park. It's actually the vision for Centennial is truly regional in nature and would be a great asset for the St. Louis region. So, you know, we're interested in helping to move the project forward and moving any alignment forward as best we can.
Thanks, Mark. And I also wanted to add that we do value, Mark, all of the work that you have done, studying the options, getting away from, you know, like you mentioned, the obstacles we had before was related to easements and, you know, acquiring land for the development of the Greenway. So thank you for doing that. And that is, like Mark Vogel said, we you know, for the future, what we need to do is to do a little bit of community engagement, make sure that, like you said, all of the partners are in line with, you know, the same expectations that we're having to connect Ackard Park, Ackard Walkway to Centennial in along the Interbelt, and make sure all of the right of way is clear, all of the, you know, the areas that we, some, as you know, flood. So we take into account that that Wilson Avenue, all of those 26 homes that were bought out in my time there, you know, that's considered into the development of the Greenway. So it's feasible, it's doable, it'll take time, but we just want to give you our, you know, support for them, you know, the beginning and kicking this off again after so many years of having it in our books, kind of on the shelf, waiting for a partner to be willing to work with us. Are there any questions for us?
I was going to say, are there questions from members of council for any of our three presenters? Council Member Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crowe. First of all, I wanted to say hello to Angelica because it's been a while since I've seen her, and good to see you. And then my quick question is to any one of you three, and that is, has there ever been any consideration to connect Ackard Park? The end of Ackard Park ends at Vernon. Vernon is a straight shot to Hanley, and then a quick left and right on Blackberry, Blackberry all the way up to, I mean, if you understand what I'm saying, that route. I'm just wondering why that's not considered, because you're still crossing, you're still having to cross Hanley and still having to cross north and south, but that's a direct shot to, what's the street I'm thinking of? Right there next to, the new school, what am I talking about? You know, I can't even think of the name of the school now that we just worked so hard to get Blackberry. You know what I'm saying?
Tour prep.
Yeah, right there next to Tour Prep. And then that connects immediately to O'Bonham. If you understand, it's a straighter shot than the avenue that you're taking right now. Just wondering if you ever considered that.
Yeah, I'm looking at a map right now. I'm not as familiar with some of those locations that you just mentioned, but that would be part of a typical process that Great Rivers Greenway would do. When we would start a project like this, of course we do the community engagement, probably put together focus groups and different types of users, different community organizations or people who have, you know, similar interests to mine. But then on the physical side, we would look at alternative routes and try to determine what the pros and cons of each one of them would be, and then come up with, you know, some kind of a, what we call a preferred plan or an ideal alignment, you know, whatever the terminology might be. And then finally, it would be some kind of an implementation plan that, you know, might divide it up into three or four different segments. We might look at other types of projects. For example, if the city or the county are doing some resurfacing or ADA upgrades, we'd want to piggyback and not miss out on an opportunity to partner on a project and leverage other resources, similar to what, you know, unfortunately the opportunity that we missed out on with St. Louis County on Vernon. But to answer your question more directly, I personally have not studied the route that you're describing right now, but that would be part of our process, would be to take a look at all potential possibilities and figure out which one truly does make the most sense.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'll add a little bit of history, Council Members Motherson. I don't know if you remember our, when I was at the city, our dealings with St. Louis County were very restrictive in regards to bike and, you know, Councilmember Hales know what I'm talking about. You know, the difficulty dealing with, you know, coordinating activities that will take anything on their part, on their right of way. So when the city developed the Bike and Ped Master Plan that you may remember from, was it 2015, perhaps? Yeah, somewhere around that. The city kind of avoided all of the county roads because of that, because we wanted to, you know, kind of keep us away from counties' right-of-ways and keep us within cities' right-of-ways. So that was, that is another ingredient that we need to look into account when developing routes.
And may I just add this, Council Member Smotherson, one of the you know, gold standards that I was trying to achieve was not to take away anybody's parking spot. I think if you go in front of all those duplexes and homes along Balson from Midland to the high school, there's parking in the middle of the street. I'm just not sure how you could create a separate trail along there without impacting the parking along there. And that may also be true along Blackberry as you go west from north and south to the Torah Prep School. The idea of impacting a resident's parking spot in front of their home, I think would be a challenge. A lot of people might find that unhelpful. They wouldn't like that.
I think Mr. Hales had a question as well.
Thank you. I really have probably a GRG question. You mentioned process and being at basically square one. What is your kind of rough idea of how long of a process you would need?
That's a good question. I shouldn't say square one because it was previously studied, but since it has been 10 years, you know, there's been a lot of changes, not only in residents who live in the neighborhood, but also people's attitudes toward bike and pedestrian activities and things. So we wouldn't be starting completely from scratch, but, you know, typically it's, I'm going to guess probably about a, you know, 9 to 12 month process to do a planning study. And then we would go into engineering drawings and look for grant opportunities, especially in urban situations. It's very, very expensive, as you all know, to do infrastructure projects like this. And so, you know, we're currently in a climate where there are some quite a bit of federal programs that are out there. And so once we would, you know, have an idea of, you know, like when there's be a NOFO released with some funding opportunities, we'd collaborate on a grant and we kind of work backward from when those dollars might be available. But it's typically several years from the time that we start an engagement and planning study through the first round of construction.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Ms. Klein.
Yeah, I just, I have a comment and a question. Thank you for your presentation, Mark, and for being here, Angelica and Mark. My first comment is just, I think that this is great timing because we're just looking at this Community Visioning 2040 project. And I think that this bike path project meets a lot of those objectives in terms of, you know, the community has expressed a desire to become more sustainable and also to connect different parts of our city, have connections to the parks, the schools. So I think this is really great timing to bring this discussion up and to really commit to moving forward with this. You know, in my question is, you know, in terms of connecting different parts of the cities, is there any precedent for having kind of feeder trails that come into the main trail so that, you know, someone say from deep in the third ward can get to that main trail or from the other side of the city? Is there any precedent for that, I guess, is my question.
Do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I can take okay. It only because I was in UC City when the University City Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan was developed. So that plan is great. I don't know if you have seen it. And actually, I just looked it up online. It was developed in 2014, actually, same year that as we were working on this segment of Centennial Greenway. And the answer to your question is yes. Yes, there are many north-south connections from, you know, down in Clayton and north on Page Avenue, along, you know, 82nd Street, Ferguson, Pennsylvania. There are a few connectors that are, it's a network. And I think it's online if you want to look at it, that master plan. Of course, like any plan needs an update and revisions to it because, you know, like Mark said, people's attitudes towards bike ped facilities may have changed. I remember one neighborhood didn't want to have any bike ped facilities through it. Today might be different. So, but there is a consideration for connectivity within the city.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Could I ask about when you talk about the phrase road diet, what does this look like? Is the trail on the far right hand side? Is the trail similar in Clayton where you have the parking and then you've got a trail that seems to be rather controversial? I'm curious what does it look like?
It doesn't look like what they have in Clayton at all.
Mark, if you want, I can just tell you. Try to imagine in most of these segments where it's parallel to a road, like a wide sidewalk with a buffer in between this wide sidewalk, which would be the trail, the greenway, and the roadway. So we want to separate traffic from the greenway. So provide safety. Imagine a wheelchair or a mom pushing a stroller. You know, providing a safe space for them. So try to imagine this sidewalk on, for example, I'm just going to throw a street, Shaftesbury, on the south side of Shaftesbury, where the existing sidewalk is, just widen that sidewalk, create that buffer space, and shift the geometry of the street a little bit, keeping parking and allowing two-way traffic. So it the street just will narrow a little bit down. That helps with speed control as well. People will drive slower. I know that street, particularly cars, go fast because it's so wide. So that's one good example that you could take a little bit of road with and then just widen the sidewalk and that'll become the greenway.
So is this more similar to the sidewalk and bike path that is along Forsyth, along the southern end of the WashU Danforth campus, where you've got a path?
Yes.
You've got a path and you've got a little break and then you've got a sidewalk.
Yep, something like that. When there is room, we can do that, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other questions from members of council or Greg or anyone else? Anyone? Hearing none.
Actually, do you mind if I ask a very quick question?
Sure.
The council member mentioned the 2040 plan, and I have to admit I'm not familiar with it. Could you give me like a 30-second overview of what the plan is going to cover and what the time frame is on that study?
Gregor, you want to take that one?
Sure. I can. The intention of the plan was to create a clear vision for the city, one that all of the residents had an opportunity to participate in developing. And it addresses areas ranging from parks and recreation to education to, I believe, transportation. And so the component that Councilmember Klein was referring to was the broader belief of connectivity within University City, connecting various areas, which was one of the stated goals, I believe, within the vision document. But we're happy to share that document with you, and the council will be taking action on it, in fact, tonight. So it's on their agenda for final consideration.
Thank you very much.
Anything else? Hearing nothing else, we will adjourn until 6:30 for the regular session and move forward then with an update on the flood at the beginning of the meeting and an amendment if the council so chooses to move, I think it's J1 from the consent agenda. Hearing that, Mark, thank you. Mark, thank you. And Yelka, thank you. Good to see you again. Chiefs, to all of you, thank you. We'll meeting adjourned. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Thank you.